I sometimes speed, like most people, got half my money back, a kind of negative lottery ticket. Is there a law against accidents? Must there always be someone responsible, some way to be compensated for bad luck? Read of a man suing the city of Portland because he twisted his neck avoiding a tent on the sidewalk. This guy has a record of past lawsuits, either dropped or settled out of court. With few public defenders, most arrests are pled down. No bargain, admitting to something you didn't do to save legal fees and maybe jail time. And Trump won't be convicted by a jury of his peers because so few are close to his equals and none of them would ever have to serve jury duty. For poetic justice, the only kind I can afford, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Jenka Soderberg, Chris Gow, and Reed Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is the delightful Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Eric Tegadoff, Farah Siddiqui, Antonia Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
Party.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm speaking with Street Roots digital producer Kanani Cortez about the latest issue of the paper, The Vendor Issue. Welcome to the show, Kanani.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to talk with me. So, The Vendor Issue, for folks who don't know, what's it all about?
So, The Vendor Issue is an issue that we do once a year. In replacement of our regular news coverage, we highlight some people who are at the core of Street Roots, which are our Street Roots vendors. And if you're not familiar, Street Roots vendors are the folks who sell the newspaper, the physical newspaper. And these are people who are oftentimes experiencing homelessness and poverty and are selling Street Roots as a means of low barrier income opportunity. And so this issue is just a wonderful opportunity where we get to take some time to chat with vendors and ask them about their experiences. And that's what you'll see in this issue.
I was hoping that we could go through the paper kind of section by section to give listeners a feel for what is in this edition. Does that work for you?
Yes, that is a great idea.
Okay, why don't we start with, on page four, vendors in the field.
Yeah, so page four has kind of a little stop at these vendors' sales posts. And so what you see is some of the vendors at their sales post, and they're just kind of talking about what it's like to sell there or their experience there and the community they've built. And it's awesome. I think that a lot of times you'll see Street Roots vendors at kind of places with a high foot traffic, so outside grocery stores, at the farmer's market, or a coffee shop. And one of the ones I love so much is, I believe it's Anthony Rogers, who talks about selling at the PSU farmer's market. But he's the son of another vendor, Sandra, and I kind of love this idea that they're kind of a mother-son duo selling the paper at the PSU Farmers Market. Another one of the great stories are Melissa and Natalie, who talk about how they kind of tag team being Street Roots vendors. And so if someone's, you know, not feeling well or you know, not able to sell the paper on whatever day, the other person is there to support them and kind of make sure, hey, I'm still going to get to selling the papers today. And just kind of a really wonderful act of like friendship and community. I think another big thing that you'll glean from these is that, yes, Tree Roots vendors really are part of the community. And it's like, you know, you see your neighbor every single day, or your mailman, or someone walking their dog or going to school. I feel like it's the same vibe for a Street Roots vendor as you see this person selling a newspaper every week, and it's a wonderful opportunity to get to know one of your neighbors and build some community while also reading some great news.
Nice. Well, let's go to the next page. Vendor Wins, success stories in housing and employment.
Yeah, Vendor Wins, I love this spread as well. One thing about, I think, working at Street Roots, and myself, I don't have a ton of face time with our vendors, but I hear a lot from our vendor team staff. And one of the things that they talk about is the really awesome moment that someone who has been on the streets or waiting for housing gets their keys. And it's always like a really exciting and celebratory moment. And so we really wanted to kind of highlight that experience and feeling. So we have on this page or this spread some stories about vendors who've recently become housed and their experiences. And I think, yeah, it's just important to read about these wins and also know that it's like such a long road to get there and what those transitions look like. And then we also have some folks to talk about getting recent employment. And I think that's super exciting. And yeah, if you're in between housing or transitioning back in or out of housing, I think, you know, people know it's really hard to hold down a job or find a job that's willing to work with where you're at. And so that's another big thing to highlight for some of our vendors.
Well, the next spread is called New Building Hype, in lovely color, no less. What can you tell me about this?
Yeah, so definitely, like you mentioned, the color, it's lovely. This is illustrated by Etta O'Donnell King, who's our designer slash illustrator. And they also did the front cover as well, which should not be missed. But yeah, this is just hearing from vendors what they're excited about as we await our grand opening of the new Street Roots building. We've definitely talked about it a lot before on the show. And it was great to hear specifically from vendors talking about what they're excited to have access to. And I think one of the big things is, laundry and shower access that we'll be building out in this building, and kind of like hygiene care and space to just take care of yourself. Another big thing that is kind of building a lot of excitement is the rooftop. We're really hoping to kind of build out, they're calling it the school in the sky, a kind of classroom and meeting space, and also a space for like some calmness and stillness among a lot of greenery, but also on this rooftop. And so you're kind of at the heart of everything and you're in Old Town, but we're hoping that the roof can kind of create a place of respite as well. And so those are some of the things that vendors mentioned being really excited about.
Can you give us a little bit of details for folks who may not know about the new Street Roots building? You obviously mentioned laundry and shower facilities, the new rooftop area. What all is going to be involved and where are we at in that process?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our Street Roots purchased a building in the last 2 years, and we are looking at an opening in August of this year. August 1st, I believe, would be our grand opening. And so it's looking really beautiful. If you drive down Burnside, you'll see this awesome blue building, and it has our marquee outside. But what that looks like is really an expansion of space for Street Roots. This year, the organization turns 25, and I think this is such a big representation of that. And so in the first time in our history, we're going to be expanding our space. And I think what that looks like for vendors is an expanded space for them to come and grab their papers, have a cup of coffee, use a computer, charge their phone, charge their wheelchairs. We'll have an expanded newsroom and offices for Street staff. And then, as I mentioned, the rooftop and the basement, where there'll be more services for vendors. This is a huge project, and we're currently still fundraising for this, actually, and you can take a look on our website at some of the initiatives there, and one of them is this Dream Office Catalog, and so you can kind of see if you want to support the development of the building, how that kind of looks in the space, what it looks like to donate and, you know, purchase a chair that will be in this building. But overall, I think the building is really Street Roots kind of getting older and growing in a really beautiful way. And it's also right exactly in the heart of where we want to be in Old Town. So people are really excited about it, and I definitely am.
August 1st, mark in the calendar. Okay, next page here. On page 10, there is the Volunteer Spotlight. What can you tell me about this one?
Yeah, the Volunteer Spotlight is wonderful. Like I mentioned, the vendors are at the heart of our organization, and we would be remiss not to mention our volunteers. And so this highlights a few volunteers who volunteer in the vendor office and also in other parts of the organization. But some of these folks are, you can find them at the front desk in the vendor office and at the coffee station. And so these people are really building relationships with our vendors and see them every week. And sometimes that looks like serving coffee, connecting people to resources, you know, a pair of socks or whatever it is that day. And yeah, I think that this is just really wonderful words from them about why they choose to volunteer with Street Roots and what it means to them. It's really worth the read. And yeah, shout out to volunteers, volunteers everywhere. I think people who are choosing to contribute their time to something that matters to them is really incredible.
And we'd be remiss not to mention the vendor poetry, always a favorite.
Yes, we have a wonderful two-page spread of vendor poetry for this issue. And if you don't know, a lot of our vendors are incredible creative writers and poets and artists. And so typically we have a page of poetry in the vendor issue, or in every issue. And in the vendor issue, we've got to expand on that. And so it's a really nice place to kind of take a break from the news sometimes and read what people are thinking about creatively in their creative writing. And so there's some beautiful poetry to be read on that page.
What do you hope that readers get from this issue of the paper?
I hope that, yeah, readers get to spend a little more time with their vendors. I think if you are familiar with your vendor, you have a kind of regular vendor, it's always nice to be like, hey, that's my vendor. You see them in the paper. But also know that, yeah, this is, I think, a really huge operation that happens week after week, and vendors are really at the heart of that. And if you're like, oh, I see my True Roots vendor, I don't really talk to them, and, you know, maybe they don't want to talk to you either sometimes, I don't know. But I think this is just a great example and opportunity of, like, building community and hearing about other people's stories. And so just really encourage people to read through this and know that their Street Roots vendor is their neighbor, and that kind of goes for all of our That goes for all of our neighbors, housed or unhoused. And yeah, I just hope people enjoy the kind of creativity that goes into this and hearing from people in their community.
Where can folks find a copy for themselves?
You can find a copy of Street Roots from a vendor near you. And like I mentioned earlier, you can typically find your vendor outside high foot traffic areas. And you can check out our website at streetroots.org. To take a look at the rest of our news.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you so much.
That was Street Roots digital producer Kanani Cortez speaking with me about the latest issue of the paper, the vendor issue. More information is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Reed Johnson. We're in the studio speaking with author Linda Neal, co-founder of Earth and Spirit Council, about the documentary film The Power of Ceremony, Earth Teachings for Future Generations. The world premiere of the film will be on this Sunday, April 21st at 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Welcome to the show and welcome to the studio, Linda.
Thank you, Reed.
So, Linda, can you first briefly introduce the film and maybe also the project, you know, the film touches on?
Okay. Well, we're really excited about this. The film, The Power of Ceremony, Earth Teachings for Future Generations, came about because of a program that the Earth and Spirit Council did for 20 years, which we called the Natural Way Program. And it's interesting how that came to be, how the program came to be because it was early 1990s when Thomas Banyaka, who was one of the keepers of the Hopi prophecies, he came to our home, and he was on a mission to go to share the prophecies with the United Nations. And so he was at our home, and we invited people to come and listen to him. And he, and there were, you know, people, we don't have a very big house, so there was just people up and down the stairs and everywhere. And he, because the prophecies were that that the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki brought about, marked the beginning of a time of poationi, or purification, and that we were going to go through the eye of the storm before lasting peace could come across the world, which I'm looking forward to. And he when he came to our home afterwards, after his deeply moving speech, he said to my husband and I, my husband was a member of the Acoma Otam Nation, which is Pima. He was from Arizona, and he was a spiritual leader in himself. And he told us that we needed to invite other elders in and invite them to talk. So when we when you have somebody like Thomas Banyaka telling you you need to do something, you just kind of salute and say, okay. And we began that process, and we started out in our home, and we'd invite elders from all kinds of different indigenous communities, and eventually it moved to a church in Lake Oswego because it was big, and then eventually it moved to Portland State University to their Native American Center. And so that was the beginning of what we called the Natural Way Program. And my husband's term, that was my husband's term, the Natural Way. And the Natural Way describes a way of life that's really focuses on a relationship to Mother Earth and all of life. It's a ceremonial way of life, but it's also open to all. So after about 20 years of having that program, one time at an Earth and Spirit Council board meeting, the board decided they wanted to, this was years after we'd stopped that program, we had this incredible, rich treasure trove of recordings of these elders, and some of whom had never been recorded before and have never been recorded after, and that we wanted to do something with those. We wanted to, you know, have other people be able to hear them. And during that period of time when we weren't doing anything, you know, the electronic media and social, all that stuff, you know, computers really took off. And so we really wanted to be able to put it out to the world. And so that began a very long process to develop this film. And it's because of many people, and I want to mention Quincy Davis in particular, because he was the producer. He understood how to put things together. I just wrote the script, but we put something together that is really quite special. And I really encourage people to come on out and see this film, because we've been told I've seen it maybe 50 times, and I don't ever get tired of it. So.
Now, can we touch on a little bit the first part of the title of the film, The Power of Ceremony? You mentioned, you know, you talked about the importance of ceremony, and you mentioned just now it's something that all can take part in. I wanted to bring out a quote that's in that trailer, a quote of yours where you say, we all came from a ceremonial culture. I think that's something that I would love to have you talk more about, the the significance of rediscovering ceremony. I think for a lot of people, they might feel that that's an inaccessible practice. Ceremony just isn't part of their life. But yeah, can you talk a little bit about
Yeah, well, you know, if you go back far enough in time, I don't care what color you are or what country you're from, there were ceremonies. There were planting ceremonies. There were ceremonies about the weather. There was the, you know, the solstice, the four directions, the four seasons. You know, there was, it was rich. It was a rich ceremonial life. I mean, my ancestors are, let's see, English, Welsh, German. I don't have any native blood. But it doesn't matter, because if you go back far enough in time, you came from that, and you feel like when you participate in ceremony, when it's real ceremony, and there are people that, I mean, you know, we try to do the best we can, and sometimes it's kind of feels a little phony or whatever, but the more you learn about it and the more you get in touch with the essence of what is the power of the spirits or creator or whatever you want to call it, the more you do that and bring that into your life in a symbolic way, it affects people deeply. And the reason I wrote my book initially is because I was privileged to be able to go to many, many Native ceremonies. And what I witnessed there, because I was trained as a psychologist, but what I witnessed there was I witnessed people changing and having profound experiences that years of psychotherapy wouldn't have ever done. And so I remember a friend of mine, Laura, good old Laura Berg, if you're listening, Laura, thank you very much. Anyway, she said, Linda, you should write a book about that. So I did. Yeah.
I wanted to bring up another thing. You know, you touched on, you know, these Hopi prophecies and talking about this process of purification, mm-hmm. you know, after obviously these terrible nuclear bombings in Japan at the end of the Second World War. Mm-hmm. The film also talks about humanity being in a spiritual crisis. Can we kind of talk more about, yeah, the spiritual crisis perhaps, and kind of what is that? How do you define that?
Well, I mean, you can look around and look what people are spending their time doing, and that you can look at the fact that, you know, even churches, their attendance is going down, down, down. It's like we've become more and more distracted by stuff, you know, all the stuff that's out there. And the real deep connection, the real feeling, the idea of even silence, of being quiet, is antithetical to really what's happening in our culture. I mean, I could go on and on about all the different examples of it, but there's a real superficiality that I would say is happening right now in our world. I think there's also a lot of fear. There is a lot of fear right now about what is really going on. And so we retreat rather than looking at that and what can we do about it. We retreat into stuff, TikTok videos, and things like that.
And it seems like the film sort of deals with spirituality on a very universal scale. You know, the film features eight indigenous elders and spiritual leaders. Mm-hmm. Can you talk also about how they became involved in the production of the film? Did you reach out to them? Did they come to you?
I believe we reached out to all of them. We we knew who these people were, and some of them were friends of my husband. Some of them were people I knew. One of the people that's not a Native person who's in the film is Matthew Fox, and he is the leader of Creation. He started something called Creation Spirituality. He's an Episcopalian priest. He started out as a Catholic priest, and he was on the way to being kicked out of the church, and so he decided he'd convert to Episcopalian. But he's written about 25 books about spirituality, including Creation Spirituality. is one of his books. And so it's more than, you know, this power of ceremony is more than just a native thing. You know, there's you can see it. I mean, in Judaism, they have a ceremony called Tu B'Shvat, which honors the trees. And so there's it's a broad thing. The reason that people feel drawn to native cultures is because they've had less time to forget. They've had less, you know, they're more in touch with their own ceremonial traditions and their own ceremonial practices. They haven't had all the time that we've had to forget. So that's one of the things that draws people to these native elders. And the native elders that are on the video are, let's see here. Yeah, we've got Rod McAfee, who's Akama Oatham. That was my husband. Agnes Pilgrim, who's Celeste from Oregon, and she was a member of the Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers. Marie Elise Campos Ferrer, who's from the Amazon. She was another member of the Grandmothers Council. Calvin Hakakta, who was a Klamath Wisdom Keeper, and he was also a forest activist. Ilarian McCulliff, who's Aleut from up in Alaska. Sabanfu Sumay, who is Dagara from West Africa. And Eric Gonzalez, who's a Mayan spiritual leader. And there's four of those eight, who have passed over. So there's not going to be an opportunity to hear them again. And I feel so honored that we have been able to keep their words and their voices alive for others to hear.
Now, what do you hope people, in particular, maybe people who aren't embedded in ceremonial practices, what do you hope they get out of this film?
I hope they wonder. I hope they wonder. And I hope that they would think about how to bring ceremony into their lives. Like, I had this idea, and I talked about it in my book, but let's just imagine that instead of birthday parties for kids being, you know, presents and cake and da-da-da and all that stuff, all the trappings, let's say it was a time for each child to review their life and to think about and to take something and put it into the earth and to think about what is it that they want to get out of their life in the next year. I mean, just, I have a 5-year-old grandson, and he loves things like that, you know. But we have to, as elders, we have to be willing to do it and willing to break some of the trappings of our culture, I would say.
Would you say that it's a whole scale, you know, this breaking the trappings of our culture, as you're putting it, you know, bringing ceremony into life? Would you say it's a whole scale sort of, you know, reimagining of how we do things, or is it just sort of rethinking what we're presently doing as acts, as ceremonial acts? I don't know if I maybe describe myself as well, but does that involve actually changing practices, or is it more also involve kind of rethinking the practices that we already engage in, some of which might already be
both. I think it's both. Uh-huh. I want to know, but that's a really good question. I think it's both, and I think it's how do we do it? You know, with what kind of consciousness? What are we trying to accomplish? I talk about seven elements of ceremony, and one of them is intention. You know, what is our intention? And that's a very that's really important. You know, what is it we want to what is it we want to do with this ceremony?
I wanted to pull another quote from the film. One of your speakers says, "You seal the deal. You seal it through ceremony." Mm-hmm. How would you interpret that statement?
That was Matthew Fox. I would interpret that as, it's like you do something, it brings it more into your consciousness when you do something rather than just talk about it. You know, you're actually putting something into action. You're kind of saying, this is what's important. This is sealing it. This is like, yes, this is what we're doing. I'm going to, yeah, I like that, sealing the deal. It's like, this is it. This is what we're doing.
Now, if our listeners are interested in learning more about your work, about, you know, work involved with the Earth and Spirit Council, what's the best way for them to do that?
Earthandspirit.org. That's the best way to do it. I'm in there, but the important part is to connect with other people, because we're also about building community and building this together. So we learn from each other. You know, we learn from each other. And there are many people that are within the Earth and Spirit community who are, you know, they've learned for a long time about ceremony. So anybody that wants to join us, come on in. The movie is Sunday, the 21st, at 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. And I encourage people to get tickets, because we've sold out about half the tickets already. And yeah, we might have to actually turn people away at the door. So earthandspirit.org is where you get your tickets too.
All right. Thank you, Linda, so much
thank
for coming
you,
into the studio and talking with us. We've been speaking with author Linda Neal, founder of Earth and Spirit Council, about the documentary film The Power of Ceremony, Earth Teachings for Future Generations. It's the world premiere this Sunday.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1995.